Good afternoon and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Thursday, March 11th. Our first item of business will be to take the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Barr, Representative Kosmic, excuse me.
Present.
Kosmic, present. Representative Mason.
Present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson. Representative Olson. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West. Representative West. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from March 9th. Is there a motion, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of the March 9th meeting of this committee.
Representative Petersburg moves the March 9th minutes. Is there discussion? All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes from March 9th signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we have four bills on our agenda today, and I'm very confident we'll be able to move through these in our allotted, regularly scheduled committee time. In the very unlikely event that we cannot do that, we do have a slot from House Media Services to reconvene at 5 p.m., but I don't think that's necessary, but just in case, wanted to let people know that option does exist. And then we will have another hearing tomorrow at 3, several other bills. And then at the conclusion of this hearing, I'll give folks a preview of next week. So our first bill on the agenda is House File 1318, Representative Hansen. And Representative Hansen, are you here? I know you had another commitment earlier. Are you?
I'm here.
Your representative? Oh, great. Okay. Well, Representative Hansen, I will move House File 1318 for re-referral to the General Register. And with that, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. You may remember this bill from 2 years ago. We had actually heard this, and the problem has not gone away. This relates to Minnesotans trying to receive a replacement Social Security card online. And I think when we were here 2 years ago, we were one of 13 or 15 states where it was unavailable to be able to get a Social Security card replacement online. This problem became known to me. I was sitting in a coffee shop and I had a constituent came up and said, "Do you realize how hard it is to get a Social Security card replacement? So if you've changed your name, or if you laminated your Social Security card back when you were younger, planning ahead to protect it, if you've lost it, if you can't find it or it's tattered, getting a replacement card online, we were one of a few states. Now we are one of five states. So if you have a moment, I would encourage you to just Google, how do I get a replacement Social Security card? Then you will see that Minnesota is one of five states where you cannot do this. So with COVID, this has become even more of an acute problem because the ability to go to a Social Security office have all of your documented material and get that Social Security card has become very difficult as those Social Security offices, many have been closed. So there's been no option. And with Real ID implementation coming up, it becomes a more current problem for Minnesotans to try to get this. When we heard this in judiciary, I think last week, since that time, I've had received numerous comments from Minnesotans about how difficult this was. I think the word used was horror by many people, how difficult it was to get a Social Security replacement card. So what has been the holdup? It's Minnesota law. Even though this Social Security is a federal issue, it's Minnesota law on how we deal with data. So today we have in front of you 1318. It has been getting more support as it has come along. I would ask you to co-author this bill and hopefully make that four states if you can't get a Social Security card replacement online. Let's bring Minnesota into 2021.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. We do have also, I believe, Ms. Fassbender from Driver and Vehicle Services, if people have questions of the department, but we'll go right into questions of the author. First on the list is Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this initiative forward. I think it's a good one, and I hope you have meet with success this time around. I do have one question for you, though. Which is harder, getting your Social Security card or getting a hearing in the Environment Committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, so your call came in about 10:30, so I have been in meetings since then, and I will give you a call after this hearing sometime today.
Thank you. Zoom is good for something.
Okay. Representative Petersberger, do you have a bill before the Environment Committee, or is this to the...
no comment at this point. I don't want to take my chances one way or the other. So this is a couple of different things. First of all, Representative Hansen, I very much appreciate that. I support the bill 100%. Matter of fact, I have one. I had it started to be jacketed before I knew that you had yours. Mine does have a companion in the Senate, so I'm hoping you have one. But that is my actually fundamental question is about procedural, but this absolutely is something that I support and would ask everybody else to vote yes for it as well. We need to be able to deal with it. My procedural question is it's going to the General Registry. Is it also your choice, Mr. Chair, that it may also end up in the in our omnibus bill as well? And is there going to be a Senate companion that can move forward separately? What are your thoughts there? Either one.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. So I had sent the yellow jackets, Representative Petersburg, over to Senator Curran when I put it in. And then I realized that Senator Coleman had put in a bill that was very similar, if not identical. So I sent her an email, maybe week, 10 days, 2 weeks ago, and I have not received a response on that. I think if we've got identical bills, there could be a comparison. You know, just my suggestion is always try to put legislation in a couple places. If we have it on the register and it can get matched up, that's one thing, and an omnibus bill is another. But that's up to Chair Hornstein on it. But I think this is such an important thing. You know, if we can show some bipartisan support, and if you want to co-author this one, I'd be happy to do that, and I'm sure Representative Torkelson would want to do that as well, and any other members, so we can get this going, and then that would show support. I think also I'm going to follow up with Senator Curran and see if he'll drop that in, or if we can find some way of procedural tying this so that it's not a procedural problem on our end.
Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Representative Petersburg. You know, I agree with you and Representative Torkelson and Chair Hansen that this is a really important bill. And, you know, we need to get it done. I know we talked about this last year in our, you know, COVID, we had our, four caucus conversations, and unfortunately it didn't get passed then. But I agree again with Chair Hansen that we have a growing support. So, I think there's certainly an option to include this in the omnibus bill. I think we want to assess, how this progresses on its own. But I want to give you, Representative Petersburg, and Chair Hansen and the committee, my firm commitment that as chair, one of the committees of jurisdiction for this bill, I'm going to do all I can to make sure this is signed into law this year.
Thank you. Can I just say one more comment?
Absolutely. Yeah, you have the floor, Representative Petersburg, and please follow up.
Thank you so much. I 100% agree with all of that, and I have reviewed the bills, and they are absolutely identical, word for word, and I'll be glad to sign on your bill. I'll do that later today, because I think it is important for us to do it. It doesn't matter who gets credit for it. It's just something that we need to do. So thank you for bringing it forward, and thank you for your commitment, and let's see what we can do to move it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, and thank you, Representative Petersburg, for your support. Representative Mason.
I'm really curious, why in the world, or how is it that Minnesota can block getting the federal Social Security card?
Chair Hansen, what is your understanding of the background? I think you did mention some federal statutes, but what is your understanding as to why Minnesota seems to appear lagging behind other states in getting this done?
Chair Ornstein and Representative Mazin, if you look at the bill, what we're changing is in Minnesota law, lines 1.16, 1.17, and 1.18. So it's that verification that allows the state system to process. So it's
the access, okay.
It's been data management.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg, is your hand still up from before? Did you have an additional comment or question?
What I was going to do is just clarify for Representative Mason that currently the statute doesn't allow Minnesota to divulge that information to Social Security. And so without that, the Social Security can't verify. And so that's the reason. Once we give them permission to do so, then they can verify.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there any further discussion about this House file?
Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Well, seeing none, Chair Hansen, do you have any final comments about House File 1318?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can help all of our constituents by doing this. I think time is of the essence. I would invite all members of the committee to co-author 1318. I think it's a good bill, and let's get some momentum going so we can get this passed.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, for your work on this, your work over several years, in fact. So that is appreciated. Seeing no further discussion, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1318 be re-referred to the General Register. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins? Representative Elkins? Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is referred to the General Register. Thank you very much, Chairman Hansen.
Mr. Dodge, I'm sorry. Can you add Elkins as an aye on that as well?
Noted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Elkins votes aye, so the final tally is 17 ayes and 0 nays, and the bill is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Hansen. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 1058, Representative Burkle. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Burkle, and I am going to move that House File 1058 also be referred to the General Register. And please tell us about your bill, and I know that you have several testifiers.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Ornstein, for having me back, and thank you, members of the committee, to hear House File 1058. This bill is an effort to solve a problem that I believe many rural counties are going to be facing if they haven't been already. In Minnesota statute now, 16307, requires county engineers to be employed by the county and also requires that they be a resident of the state. And this bill simply eliminates the residency requirement for the county engineer position. Currently in Roseau and Kitson counties in my district, they're both searching for county engineers, and this search has now gone on for over a year in Kitson County, and it's approaching a year in Roseau County. And I'll be brief. I'll stop there, and I'll let my testifiers step in here. Teresa Gilley will be first up here. She's the current chair of the Kitson County Board, and I'll let her explain it in a little more detail. And then I have Emily Murray from AMC and Dan Larson here to talk as well from Minnesota Rural County. So if you're
thank
okay,
you,
Representative Chair, I'll turn it over to Teresa Gilley.
Thank you, Representative. Ms. Gilley, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, I'm Teresa Gilley. I am the chairman of the Board of Commissioners for Kitson County, and I actually live just east of Hallock.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you for having me. Representative Burkle is right. We have our long-term county engineer retired a year ago around this time. And we started the process of hiring a new engineer. And it has been a very, very long process of we've had it out. We've worked with AMC. We've worked with a lot of other MRC. We've worked with, you know, a lot of different organizations. We've had our recommendations or the criteria out there for over a year now. And we kind of, we've had a couple of really good candidates, and most of, and the two candidates, actually, I think there's been two so far that we have interviewed that would have probably taken the position, but then there is this clause in the statute that they have to be a Minnesota resident, which is, I don't know how long that clause has been in there, but I do know that, you know, family dynamics have changed. For Kitson County, we're very much up in the very northwestern corner where we corner Canada and North Dakota, which doesn't give us a lot of wiggle room to find an engineer. And so right now we do have a licensed land surveyor who, for some reason, we can have a land surveyor that lives in North Dakota. And actually, I think he might even take the engineer position if he didn't have to, because that's where his family is located, is over in North Dakota. And it really does give us a lot of limitations. And so we have been partnering. We've partnered with Roseau, and then Roseau's engineer took Lutasa's job, and then so now they're in the process of looking for an engineer, and we were still in the process of an engineer. We have hired DDA, David Drone Associates, to assist us with helping us find an engineer, and we're hopeful, but so far it doesn't look very good. And so far everything else we've been doing when we've partnered with Roseau, and we're still partnered with Marshall County, which is costing us over $12,000 a month plus mileage. And there's only so much, there's only so long you can do that too. And right now when I've talked to Lon, I think he feels like he's not doing either one of our counties much justice. So looking forward, I would like to strike that residency requirement. I think there's close to 40 counties that border other states and other borders. And it just creates a limitation, especially when we're such a small county and we don't have a big pool to pull from.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Gilley. And then what we'll do is we'll hear from Ms. Murray and Mr. Larson, and then if the committee has any questions of any of the testifiers, we'll take them together. So thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for your service as well.
Thank you, and thank you for all you guys' service. I do miss going down to the state legislature.
Yeah, well, hopefully in 2022, we'll see you. our next testifier is Ms. Emily Murray from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Ms. Murray, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Emily Murray with the Association of Minnesota Counties, also representing the Minnesota County Engineers Association. Our organizations don't have an official platform position on this issue, which is why we remain neutral on House File 1058, but we do understand the recent challenges that some of our northern Minnesota counties and other border counties have faced when hiring county engineers, and we believe that having flexibility in hiring is helpful to fulfill these positions. We just want to thank Representative Burkle for working so closely with his counties on this issue, and also for working with our organizations and keeping us up to speed on everything. So that's it for me, short and sweet, but thank you for the time to testify, and I'm here if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Murray. Our final testifier on this bill is Mr. Dan Larson, and he is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Counties. And Mr. Larson, welcome back to the Transportation Committee. I know you've been here a few times in the past, so it's good to see you again. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Wonderful to be back. Dan Larson. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Rural Counties, 35 counties in rural Minnesota, the only organization to advocate specifically for rural county concerns. And Mr. Chairman and members, my current trajectory in life has been good, but if I had it to do all over again, I'd be a county engineer. And the reason for that is they are in high demand. And Commissioner Gilley's representation of what Kitson and Roseau County are going through, they are not alone. So they experience a labor crunch, and it's across the board. It's not just engineers, but it's talent across the board. County engineers just happen to be kind of at the pinnacle. And if you have one, you want to keep them. And if you don't have one, it can be the kind of a situation like we heard from Commissioner Gilley, not very good. And so we're here to support the bill and to make the further case that I think Commissioner Gilley made quite well. Kitson County in the quarter of the state with Canada on top and North Dakota on the west. Border counties have it worse in this. And so loosening up this restriction and the bill that Representative Burkle is bringing forward is needed relief.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. And I also just wanted to note that in your packets, there is some written testimony, which you should take a look at, from the former Kitson County engineer, Kelly Bengston. So we want to make sure that you were aware of Ms. Bengston's written testimony. Questions of the author and the testifiers. First on the list is Representative Murphy, Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Larson. So from this testimony, I gathered that maybe if an engineer can't be found, a surveyor can be found. Are there not distinctions between surveyors and engineers, and do the counties have to merge various positions that if they're a rural small county, do they have to merge definitions of what they're hiring for?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm not the definitive answer on what the qualifications are for a county engineer, but I think they're pretty pointed in what they're looking for. I'm not sure if a surveyor can cross the line and become one, but I'll leave that question for somebody else.
Okay. Ms. Gilley, Commissioner, you mentioned it, and then I was wondering then, how could you get along, if you have the surveyor, how could you get along without the engineer?
Right now we have we hire us a surveyor that kind of comes on demand. So it's kind of, it's a contracted position. So we have a contract with the surveyor from North Dakota. He actually has an engineer degree and would probably be a county and would probably be our county engineer. According to Kelly Bankston, he would be very interested. The moving part, because his residence is in North Dakota, there are two separate positions, but the surveyor position for Kitson County is a contracted position, and where the engineer is a payroll position. Going forward, you know, if we could, if that was an option, we would like to have that option. We've talked to Roso about partnering engineers, but when you get to the construction season, the summer season, and even leading up to that, when you're doing the plans and the engineering process that has to be submitted for CASA roads and things like that, I can tell here that not having a full-time engineer is putting extra strain on the rest of the staff. And we don't have excessive staff. We are pretty much always a kind of a little bit of a bare bones operation. I think our staff does a wonderful job, but because we don't have that county engineer that's kind of heading it up all the time and kind of always on top of that, it leaves a lot of responsibility to the rest of the staff.
Thank you very much. And I think that's a good answer, because the engineer has to have a degree, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is a degree and of some other accreditations, from my understanding.
Right. So then you can't merge jobs. And I think that residency is an undue requirement.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. I see that Ms. Murray would like to weigh in as well. Ms. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add a little bit to Representative Murphy's question, which I think we've got to there in the end, but yes, an engineer must be licensed in the state of Minnesota. So while this bill would allow them to live outside of the state, they would still need to be licensed in Minnesota. So the land surveyor, just hypothetically speaking, could become the county engineer as long as they were a licensed county engineer. And there are other requirements, of course, but I just thought that distinction was important to make.
Thank you. Very helpful information to have, Ms. Murray. Representative Nelson, Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question about North Dakota, and we're talking about counties that border the Canadian border, would this allow a Canadian citizen that's an engineer and meet all the requirements to also be able to get licensed in Minnesota and do that work here? Again, that is just because what we're talking about is up on that border.
That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that one. Does anyone on the panel have an answer to the international piece to this? Any takers?
Some of those hockey players.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Petersburg.
I would just give you this, that this doesn't change any kind of federal statutes in regards to working here in the United States or anything else. All it does is it removes the requirement that they have to live within Minnesota. So if somebody is from another country, is working here legally and so forth, I would imagine that would have to fit within those parameters. But in regards to this, we aren't indicating that you have to be anything other than we're just eliminating the requirement that they live in Minnesota, is my take.
That's consistent with my understanding, Representative Petersburg, but I don't know. I mean, is this something that maybe Mr. Burris, okay, Commissioner Gilley, do you have some perspective on that question? I think it's a good one.
It is Mr. Gilley. And we've actually talked about this off and on. So far with the process that we've had in Kitson County, we have not had anybody from Canada apply. Even when we talk about the maybe for us getting an engineer that is licensed in Minnesota, that lives in North Dakota, in the perfect scenario, we would love them to live in Kitson County. And we'd love all of you to live in Kitson County. So I'll be honest with you. But going forward, if we can get somebody hired, I think as we go forward, we would always encourage somebody to move to Kitson County, and move to the state of Minnesota. But if that doesn't fit their criteria, there's a big job that gets done here with our roads and bridges, and we don't want to make any mistakes. We don't want to have problems that arise that we can't handle, and we sure don't want to not have work done because of that we get lack of funding. So with that, I guess when we get somebody from Canada, I guess maybe we might look at that. But so far, that hasn't been an issue.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilley. And I would just direct people. I think Representative Petersburg made a good point. I mean, there are a lot, there's definitely federal guidance around, people who are employed in the United States but have citizenship and residency elsewhere. And so I imagine that this would fall under those parameters. So appreciated that perspective, Representative Petersburg. Okay, I don't see any. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I know in the past there have been quite a bit of litigation in regards to trying to enforce people's living within a jurisdiction in which they're working for it. And almost always that has been said that is illegal or unconstitutional. You can't force somebody to live within your jurisdiction. So I'm surprised that we have this still in statute. So I think it's a good bill for us to support. And I think Representative Burkle and others that worked on it, bringing it forth, I think it just allows us to have greater opportunity and have a greater pool for us to deal to select our employees from. So thank you.
Thanks, Representative Petersburg. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'm going to ask Representative Burkle if he would like, as the author, to make any closing comments, and then the committee will act on the bill. Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Representative Orstein. I just want to say that, just in the context of where we live and for those folks who understand northwestern Minnesota and how close we are to the borders here, this is a really simple solution to a problem that's existed for these two counties and many others, I think, in the future. Just to simply drive across the border and go to work, you can look at places like Grand Forks and East Grand Forks and work your way south, Fargo to Moorhead. There's going to be situations like this across the state. So I think this is a really simple solution to solve the problem. And I'm looking, hopefully, to have your support to help these counties up in northwestern Minnesota to fix this problem.
Thank you, Representative Burkle. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1058 be re-referred to the General Register. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Koznick?
Aye.
Koznick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, House File 1058 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you very much, Representative Burkle. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1908. Is Representative Lilly with us? I see him on the list here. Representative
Lilly. Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Fantastic. Great to see you. Great to see you again. And I will move that House File 1908 be re-referred to the General Register. We're sending lots of bills to the General Register today, members. Please tell us about House File 1908.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Transportation Finance Committee for hearing House File 1908 today. This bill contains a number of changes to the bicycle traffic regulations, and the goal of the language is to bring the statutes regarding bicycle traffic into alignment with the corresponding statutes for vehicle traffic. And last biennium, the bill was able to pass the House floor 120-22, and Representative Bernardi led it down the path to success. So I'm not really sure why I'm here. She should still be carrying it, but it's a great bill and pretty straightforward. But today with me I have Mr. Riley from the Bicycle Alliance, and hopefully if he can get into more details of the bill. One of the things I like about the bill is that it kind of covers both things of bicycle and road vehicle rights, but also responsibilities, because this is a two-way thing. And to me, that's, I think, a really good thing to consider. But please, if you'd like to hear, if you're willing to hear from my presenter, Mr. Chair, could pass to him now. That'd be great.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. And as we traditionally do, we'll hear testimony and then we'll open it up for questions to the author and the testifiers. So our first testifier, as Representative Lilly, as Chair Lilly mentioned, is Dorian Grilly. Mr. Grilly is the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Grilly.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. My name is Dorian Grilly. I work for the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. And thank you, Representative Lilly, or Chair Lilly and Chair Bernardi, for making this happen this year and in 2019. It's exactly the same bill that passed in 2019. Many of the changes were recommended to us as best practices by the National Conference of State Legislatures. Just real quickly, sections 1 and 3 centralizes and makes consistent the definition of bikeway in both chapter 160 and 169. They were slightly different. Sections 2 and 6 modify the meaning of bicycle lanes so that all bike lanes are considered part of the roadway, and that is the main traveled portion of the road and not the shoulder, which is the contiguous portion of the road that is not traveled upon except by bicycles and other slow-moving vehicles, and in some cases buses. This is necessary because not all traffic laws apply to those operating on the shoulder. So we wanted to make sure that we were consistent between the shoulder and the roadway for operation of a bicycle. Section 6 further clarifies that traffic laws apply to those riding on the shoulder, in a crosswalk on a shoulder, and that bicycles in a crosswalk have the rights and duties of a pedestrian. Section 5 resolves the differences between Minnesota Statute 169.18 subdivisions 3 and 5 and makes them consistent in saying that the passing distance when overtaking bicycles requires at least 3 feet or half the vehicle's width when passing. The half the vehicle's width when passing was something you agreed to and passed a couple years ago, and it was just a technicality that it didn't get done in subdivision 3 and 5 at the same time. It also contains various technical cleanup to modernize the language that was suggested by Mr. Burris. And section 7 changes the poorly understood as far to the right as practicable to as far to the right as safe as the bicycle operator determines is safe. And it also makes it legal for bicyclists to proceed straight through an intersection from a right-hand turn lane. And not that anybody's being ticketed or arrested for riding straight through a right-hand turn lane, but technically it is illegal. And I live near and ride frequently on a busy county road with a 10-foot shoulder. The shoulder turns into a right turn lane for many quiet residential streets. It just doesn't make sense to pull out into the driving lane and block the 45-mile-an-hour traffic each time there's a right turn lane. As I said, I'm not getting ticketed, but the issue is that if someone passes me and turns right into me, or someone coming in the other direction turns left and hits me, it would be my fault. So as previously noted, this was recommended by the Conference of State Legislatures, and it is law in several other states. So that's my comments, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Grilly, and thank you for all of your advocacy over the years on bicycle safety and infrastructure. Representative Petersburg, would it be possible, we have one more testifier, I see your hand up, but I thought we would call on Ross Pletzer first, and then we can go to questions. Is Mr. Pletzer here? I know he also submitted some written testimony as well.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Mr. Pletzer. Please state your name for the record.
Ross Pletzer. Thank you, Chair and members. I'm very pleased to see this bill. We have waited for it for a long time. I think the committee knows our bicycle laws in Minnesota are fairly recent, first really being written in 1978, and then again in 1995. And then the last time was 2013 when Representative Kahn's bill was made part of the Senate omnibus bill. So we don't get many chances to do this, but as we know, bicycling has increased in its popularity. It's everywhere. Chair, you'll know that I live, if I tell you I live in Morningside on Sunnyside Road, what a busy road that is for bicyclists most of the year, but especially now when the warm weather comes out through the first real frost. So I've seen a lot of different things. My only suggestion for the bill is the distance in passing. The previous testifier said that it was already put into law in one section as 3 feet or half the distance of the hood, basically. We didn't have a distance requirement in Minnesota until 1995, and it's been 3 feet since that time. Several countries around the world have led the way on this. The problem with 3 feet, it's not enough. The problem with the hood of a car or the width of a car, the average width of a car in the United States is 6.3 feet. So you're really saying 3 feet or 3 feet and 1.5 inches. What a lot of countries have done, including the Netherlands, a lot of biking there, the United Kingdom and Australia, is link up distance with speed. For instance, in the United States, the equivalent would be at 30 miles an hour, you give 3 feet. Anything over 30, you give 5 feet. I don't think people realize how close 3 feet is to a bicyclist or a individual pedestrian, and this includes pedestrians in our law here. 3 feet would be a terrifying distance at 30 miles an hour for most people biking and walking. Most people will normally give more, but I think it needs to be written in. Anything over 30, we should give 5 feet, because the extra risk of harm and possibly death is so much greater at that point. The other thing it allows when you have a set distance, and I've seen this in signs in Europe, is you can put up informational signs with a picture of a car, a picture of a bicycle, and draw a line between them, which says there 1.5 meters, here 5 feet. I really think we need to educate citizens that they need to give more leeway to people than 3 feet. It's not a safe distance even at 30, but it's ingrained in the statute, but we need to go beyond that for over 30. The other thing that the bill doesn't do, and a couple states have said this, and I drive to and from work every day down a frontage road on Highway 169. It's a two-lane road. It's got curbs on both sides. It's got no sidewalks, and parking's a lot on one side. So there's always a challenge with a bicyclist. Do I speed up and go around with an oncoming car? Do I wait, or do I try to squeeze through? And if you try to squeeze through, you're going to have a real problem because you can't give enough distance. So I think we need to add something that says when there's not enough roadway to comply with the 3 or I suggest 5 foot distance, then we really need to say you have to wait. Let the bicyclist pass the car until it's for safe to you to give 3 or 5 feet. That's not in the law. It's in the law in, I think, Oregon and Washington. I do think that both of these improvements are good for bicyclists. They're not a big impediment for cars. And the push in bicycling laws for equality of the roadway, I think, would really be enhanced by these two changes. So I would respectfully suggest these two to the committee, plus changing the existing 3 foot law to 3 feet at 30 miles per hour and 5 feet at anything over 30 miles per hour. And it's been proven in Europe, Australia, England, and I really think it would be a wise thing for our Minnesota drivers and bicyclists to have as well here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pletzer. With that, members, I think that concludes our testimony. I did want to note that MnDOT staff are on hand for questions if there are questions of the agency. So I have two hands up so far. First, Representative Petersburg, and then Representative Elkins. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think we always need to maintain updating our laws. I have just a minor question, just a clarification question. On line 3.31, it talks about when approaching from behind that to give an audible signal. And I've been walking on trails and other things, and I hear people will come behind me and say, coming on the left, usually. And so that helps me. So I'm assuming that, well, most of the time we think of the audible signals maybe being a small squeeze horn or a bell, but I'm assuming that audible signal would also include verbal signal, and that we would probably not expect it to be an air horn, because I could tell you if somebody came up from behind me with an air horn, I would have wished I had some clean underwear along. But is that my perception correct in that interpretation?
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. To the author, maybe Mr. Grilley, who would like to take that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that is my understanding, but I'll pass to Mr. Riley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that is my understanding too.
Okay.
It's a very good
Representative
question.
Petersburg, a follow-up or?
No, just thank you. And I plan on supporting the bill. I just want to make sure that on record, we have kind of an interpretation of what that means. So thank you.
Good question. Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the testifiers for presenting. I also am a frequent road biker, including Sunnyside Road in Edina, which is on my route from Bloomington to the Minneapolis Lakes. This is definitely a much needed update to these laws, and very welcome. I will be supporting.
Thank you. An avid biker on our committee, Representative Elkins, joins Representative Lilly as an avid biker. Okay, members, I don't see any further questions. So, Representative Lilly, did you want to have any summary or closing comments on House File 1908?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Again, thank you, Representative Bernardi. You clearly did a lot of the base work with your committee here and on this issue, and thank you for that. I also did hear the gentleman that spoke, and I'm open to listening to those as, you know, we are, this is going to be going through the Senate as well, and we can come up with a good plan to incorporate that if that's possible at this point, or, you know, to, because we obviously want to keep it safe out there for everyone involved. Again, Mr. Chair, thank you. I know you've turned into quite the bike rider. We're driving all the way from Minneapolis to the Capitol. I'm pretty impressed. You get some pretty good points for that. But no, thank you. As spring comes and we've seen with COVID, people are out on the roads and definitely wanting to use them. And we want everybody to be safe. And this will go a long way to helping that. So thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Thank you so much, Chair Lilly and Chair Bernardi, for your work over the years on this. And hopefully we have another. It's very rare these days that we get any bill on the floor that is passed unanimously. So let's hope for that result again as we head to the general register. And I will renew my motion that House File 1908 be re-referred to the general register. And Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, House File 1908 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Lilly and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you. So our next bill on the agenda is House File 553 from Vice Chair Cagle. And Vice Chair Cagle, you can move your bill and present it. And then I know you have several testifiers, so you can introduce to us as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 553 be recommended to Ways and Means.
Okay. The motion is on the table, and please let us know about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm delighted to be here to present House File 553 today. The Department of Corrections has worked closely with me and Senator Osmick, who is the chief author of this legislation in the Senate over the past month, to get it in its current shape. And I'm really excited to share this with you today. The bill is based on similar reentry legislation passed in 2009 in New Jersey. And member, section one of this bill deals with a really big barrier people re-entering community from prison face, the lack of access to ID cards. In Minnesota, you need two forms of ID to get a state ID or a regular driver's license. And so this section simply provides that DVS can accept a DOC federal or a Federal Bureau of Prisons ID card as a secondary document. Other forms of secondary documents DVS can accept include school IDs, government employee cards, and certified court documents. To give you a better picture of how common this practice is, at least 22 other states have Department of Motor Vehicles that accept some form of Department of Correction documentation as proof of identity. Section 2 of the bill codifies into law many of the current practices and policies of the DOC, and adds requirements into law for the department that will help people returning into the community succeed and in becoming productive members of our society. And so I can go over the entire bill, or do you want me just to, the ID cards is really the only portion that transportation has jurisdiction over, I believe.
Vice Chair Cagle, I think it would be appropriate just to go over the transportation interface. Obviously, you know, if members have questions about other portions of the bill, those would be in order, but we do want to focus on the area of jurisdiction for us.
Sure. So that basically is Section 1, which is the ID cards, using the DOC ID cards as a secondary document. And so with that, I believe there, Commissioner Schnell is on the call and is able to testify.
Commissioner Schnell, welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. First of all, it's an honor. I think this is the first time I've been before the House Transportation Committee, so it's an honor to be here today to speak in really in favor of this bill and speak to the importance of it. As was mentioned, this, as we look at reentry, which is really an important issue for people, regardless which side of the aisle we're on, a person may be on, and we want to make sure that the folks that are coming back into our communities across our state come back with the best possible likelihood of success. And one of the key barrier that we note is the challenge that oftentimes people coming out needing the secondary documentation to go to DVS to obtain that Minnesota ID card, which becomes essential and critical for employment in many cases, or that driver's license, which is so important to a job. And oftentimes by the time folks have been through, even though many people come through our system in quite short periods of time, the reality is that oftentimes they do not have these critical documents. I think it's really important to note that, you know, we've been working with the folks at DPS. Many of our staff are trained to provide and get this information together, but we have to comply with all the standards around documentation. And the secondary documentation, the ability to use these IDs, the DOC issued IDs, which would be essentially commensurate with a state issued employee ID, is really opens a door that we think can reduce a barrier that ultimately helps people be successful upon their return. And so I want to just really speak to how critically important this is. This entire package that is being put together, we believe really speaks to and doubles down a commitment in our state to help people who are reentering and coming back into communities across Minnesota to be successful. And this piece before your committee, secondary documentation side for obtaining a standard driver's license or ID is one of those essential steps. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I would be open for any questions should there be any.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Schnell, and you are always welcome in the House Transportation Committee.
Thank you so much.
Vice Chair Cagle, do you have any additional testifiers? I know that there's potentially other staffers from the department.
I believe, Mr. Chair, there might be some other staff here just in case I have to phone a friend.
Okay. Well, before we get to member questions, I did want to let the committee know that we have a lot of interest in this bill. And in your packets, there are letters of support from the following organizations: Legal Aid, Volunteers of America from Minnesota and Wisconsin, American Indian OIC, Avivo, Emerge Community Development, Hennepin County, Northwest Indian Community Development, the Power of the People Leadership Institute, R.S. Eden, Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. So a real diversity of voices weighing in support of this bill. So members, now is the opportunity to have any questions of Commissioner Schnell or the author. Okay, I'm scanning our list here. I don't see any. I know that we do have an A2 amendment filed. Do we have anyone offering the A2?
Was that the one that I submitted, Mr. Chair?
I believe so, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will speak to it and then withdraw it. The A2 amendment was our attempt to just clarify some of the things that we thought needed for clarification, such as, you know, whether or not this ID card will actually provide the information that would be necessary for the Department of Vehicle Services to use as a secondary card, and to clarify how easy it is to access the Department of Corrections website for verification of equipment. But as I talked to staff and to Senator Osmek, who kind of has negotiated all this, what I found that even though it was an attempt to just be helpful and try to clear up things, oftentimes we find that it just adds another layer of confusion. So I'm withdrawing it because it wasn't intended to make any to fix anything that was wrong, just to clarify. And I think that can be done in a later date if necessary. So I'm withdrawing that amendment.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And I don't know if the author or commissioner, anyone had any thoughts about the amendment or any of the other issues raised here?
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner?
I could just say that, you know, we appreciate, and I understand, you know, there is, this issue has come up, the question of, is there a way to double check or verify the veracity of that DOC issued ID? And one of the benefits that we have is that, as the representative noted, that we have the DOC website, which is another secondary way of verifying it. But I think it's important to recognizing that this is a secondary document, that, you know, it would be difficult if I were to produce my state issued ID, which includes the kind of information that is required by DVS, that there would, it would be difficult for them to, for someone to be able to secondarily verify that document. And so, which is why I think the primary document list is really a critical list. And these secondary documents just, I think, are verifying. But in this case, there is a way for people to be able to access our website to verify the identity of the person who presents that DOC ID.
Thank you, Commissioner Schnell. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Okay, let's see, going once, going twice. Seeing none, Vice Chair Cagle, do you have any closing remarks or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm just really excited about this bill. When Senator Osnick brought this idea to me, a lot of the issues that aren't in the jurisdiction of this committee were things that we had talked about at the Opioid Epidemic Response Advisory Council. And so I just see this as a really great step forward in making sure that, you know, we can get folks back into our communities and set them up for success. And so I am hoping that everybody will be able to support the bill. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. And I'm going to renew Vice Chair Cagle's motion that House File 553 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, House File 553 is on its way to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. And members, we have no additional bills before us. And I just wanted to make we have a bit of a tailwind. We're going to adjourn early today. And I did want to just make a couple of remarks in terms of where we're going in terms of tomorrow and next week. Obviously, we're not, no need to meet this evening, so that won't happen. But we are going to have several bills on our agenda tomorrow. We've been waiting for a number of bills that have been introduced this week to be given their bill numbers, and we'll be hearing some of those tomorrow. Next week will be a busy week. We're going to hear a combination of policy bills that need to make deadline, as well as starting to put together our omnibus bill. So we'll start to hear some finance bills, including several bills on the small town and township road funding next week, and looking forward to that. And we will be meeting again. We have many more bills next week, and it's likely we'll be meeting both on our assigned committee times, but also in the evening or late afternoon as well next week. Representative Petersburg, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to just roll back to the capital investment and bonding projects and so forth. Have you decided whether or not we will take a day to hear them after the bill is put together or sometime into the near future yet? Have you made that decision?
Yes, I have made that decision. I appreciate the question. Members, it's been generally custom and usage in this committee that bonding bills with that are of a transportation interest. These are oftentimes road projects, and we also have some transit projects and other infrastructure that relate to transportation. We will hear those bills on an informational basis after we pass out our omnibus bill. And, you know, the timeline for that is going to be the first week we are back from the Easter Passover break. We'll mark up and pass the omnibus bill, hopefully. And at that point, we'll start to take a look at these bonding bills. And then I think there's several other bills that we will be hearing on an informational basis. But, you know, the committee schedule will lighten up quite a bit after the Easter Passover break. But yes, I don't know at this point, Representative Petersburg, where we'll just hear all of those all in one day. We used to do that, but you know, with Zoom, I think it's a little more difficult to do that. So, you know, we may hear these bonding bills over a couple of committee sessions.
Okay. Thank you.
So members, with that, thank you so much. And we will be reconvening tomorrow at 3 p.m. And with that, this meeting of the House Transportation Committee is adjourned.